welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, we're lucky enough to have Tom Davenport, one of the top thought leaders in the analytics, data science, and artificial intelligence space in the world, joining us. Tom has over 300,000 followers on LinkedIn. He's written close to 20 books and had over a dozen articles published in the print version of Harvard Business Review. Any of you who are familiar with Harvard Business Review know it's very difficult to get a single article in a career into that print version, let alone a dozen. Also, one of his articles that became the basis for his book, Competing on Analytics, is one of the top five all-time reprint requests from Harvard Business Review. Now, Tom and I go back probably to about 2010. We did a panel together, I believe, and have bumped into each other over the years at many different events. We even worked together during a couple of years that we were both at International Institute for Analytics. He's had a variety of commercial ties over the years. He's done work with Deloitte, McKinsey, Accenture. On the academic front, he's had assignments with Harvard, MIT, Oxford, and Babson, in addition to his work on some advisory boards and being co-founder of International Institute for Analytics. I think Tom has probably literally met with more executives around the world than anybody else out there, just about. He's spent years just traveling the globe doing private corporate meetings as well as public conferences, talking about the promise of analytics and AI and where the future's heading. So I'm confident we're going to learn a lot from him today. And with that, let's welcome Tom to the show. Well, hey, Tom, welcome to Data Science Perspectives.
Happy to be here.
So, you know, Tom, it's interesting. You and I first met, it was back about a year or so before the big data craze itself even began. You know, given your view over several decades of this space, how much do you think big data facilitated the rise and adoption of analytics more generally?
Well, I'll answer that question, but did we meet at the Antique Porsche Museum? That's where I remember meeting you first, in Durham, North Carolina. So,
yeah, I think, I believe we initially met, it was when you were doing a ton of events and talks for SAS, and when I was at Teradata and we were doing a lot of partnering with SAS, I believe SAS paired us up for a panel or something of that nature at one of their shows, and that's where we first kind of interacted, and then we bumped into each other multiple times around there, and you know how those things go. Then next thing you know, we were hanging out at International Institute for Analytics. So
there you go. The interesting thing about analytics is it's had all these sort of midlife kickers. So I started really writing about analytics in 2000 or so. Nobody paid much attention then, and then did Competing on Analytics in 2005, 2007, something like that. And it was still fairly popular, but then big data came along, which, you know, it's not exactly the same as analytics, but obviously has a lot of things in common with it. And then that started to decline, and AI came along, and I don't know, probably about 60, 70, 80% comparability between these different domains, but in terms of the public interest in the media and business having projects in these areas, it kind of revitalized it every time. So it's been very fortunate, I think, for people like you and me who focused on this area.
Yeah, I think we definitely hit it at about the right time. You know, you mentioned your book, Compete on Analytics, which I believe was probably the book you've had that's been the most widely read. But you've written a lot of books. You know, just out of curiosity, how do you find the time to write so many books? It seems like it's been about one per year in the last decade or more. And then how do you choose your topics?
I really like writing books. I like to process of doing the research and talking to companies about what they're doing, and then, you know, distilling it into a book. I like going to Starbucks and sipping my iced tea while I write. So it's a good lifestyle. I can write pretty much anywhere. As to the topics, you know, I try to think about, you know, what the world is interested in, maybe a little bit about where the world is going. I've been really successful, I think, 3 times with book topics. Business process reengineering was the first one, and then knowledge management, and then the analytics stuff. I've been spectacularly unsuccessful a couple of times. I wrote a book which I really liked called The Attention Economy, and it came out on September 10th, 2001. And for some reason, the world's attention moved elsewhere. I'm not sure why, but so I think it's largely a matter of luck. This whole issue of timing, it's really hard to predict anything. So I've been lucky sometimes and not so lucky at others.
Yeah, so independent of the commercial success or not, what was the favorite book of yours in your mind? If you had to pick one book that you're proud of and that you've always liked, what would it be and why?
Well, I really liked The Attention Economy because it was fun, and we twisted the arms of my publisher to put lots of graphics and some color. Even they said we could choose one color in addition to black and white, so we chose a bright green. And it was the first book that I had. It had a website where you could kind of diagnose where your own attention was going. That was really more my co-author John Beck's ideas, but a lot of fun examples and so on, but didn't sell anything.
Well, I know, as you mentioned, even when you first got into analytics, you literally, and a lot of people watching this who are newer to the workforce might not realize that in the early days of the 2000s and in the late 90s, you actually literally had to sell the concept of analytics. It wasn't something that was accepted as today, as something you would do and you have to do. So back in those early days, before everyone said, yes, analytics is a good thing, what were some of the arguments you found were most successful that you made to get a skeptical executive to buy in?
Well, you know, as I suggested earlier, I wrote my first article about, I'd been doing work on knowledge management, and I had a bunch of companies I was working with that were sponsoring a research center at Babson on it, and I had this idea that, you know, one key form of knowledge that we weren't really looking at was knowledge derived from data. And I had no luck really persuading the sponsors of that knowledge management group to move in that direction. They were much more, you know, oriented to text and even, you know, knowledge stuck in people's heads. Then I started meeting with some people at SAS and their partners at Intel, and they said, go out and figure out what's happening in our customers with regard to kind of business intelligence. That's what it was called at the time. Nobody even called it analytics. And I found these companies who had really built their strategies around analytics, or what I started calling analytics, and the idea of competing on analytics came out of that. And I think people, when you start saying this is something that can really drive your business strategy and make you more successful than your competitors, I think that starts to get people excited, even though, as you know, I mean, the number of companies that really compete on analytics or big data or AI is still relatively small. It right. tends to inspire people about what's possible, and, you know, maybe they don't become full-fledged analytical competitors, but they at least decide they need to get better at that whole area.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I know both you and I have seen the type of questions we get asked, the type of topics that are hot. You know, you've mentioned AI a couple times already. That wasn't even on the radar hardly, just a couple of years ago, and now it's the big thing. What to, you know, today, right now, the last few months, what is it that you seem to be getting the most questions about when you talk to the folks that you talk to?
Well, the smart companies and managers and professionals within them are, they realize that AI is very similar to analytics, and it's sort of how do I build on my analytical capabilities to do AI? I think that there is, I've thought this would happen for a while, but analytics in general is less of less interest, I think. It's fairly well understood now, but how does it relate to particular functions and industries and so on, I think is mostly what I get. I'm talking with a company yesterday that had a data science platform for healthcare and only healthcare that's oriented to healthcare data and so on. And I was thinking, yeah, data science platforms are becoming a little bit commoditized. There are a lot of them out there and hard to tell the differences between them in many cases. But starting to do it by industry, I think, is a quite good idea. And I think we'll see more of that. So it's really a more specialized approach to analytics that's knowledgeable or consistent with the business, the specific business context that you're looking at.
That's interesting. I know. I'm curious on your take on another trend that I'm seeing a lot of, which is I'm getting asked a lot and seeing companies talk a bunch about data literacy, this concept of data literacy. And I know a couple of months back, I wrote a blog, something, I forget the exact title, but struggling with data literacy, that's great news. And my point there was simply that to have a data literacy problem, it implies you have enough analytics and data available that people are attempting to interpret to make that a problem. So, a few years ago, it wasn't a big issue, mainly because people were just struggling to get the information and the analytics available. So the interpretation thereof wasn't as important. So I actually think it's a great problem to have, if you will. I'm just curious what your take on that whole data literacy space is these days.
I see more interest in that as well, and I agree that it's a good sign not only to help people interpret all these analytics, but to get them to use data and analytics more in decision making. Yeah, I was talking to this healthcare company yesterday, and they were talking about developing these customized, targeted, kind of almost like next best action kind of recommendations for doctors in treating their patients. And I said, well, yeah, but are you going to educate them and let them know, what analytical decision making is about and how they explain it to their patients and so on? So I think it's a good thing that we have these capabilities. Our ability to change cultures and skill levels and so on, I think, is certainly lagging behind the analytical and technological capabilities that we have available to us now. So we need to accelerate that whole area. And the surveys that I do with companies, you ask if you ask, is your company data driven or does it have a data driven culture? The numbers are still relatively small and they're not growing very rapidly, or in some cases, they're declining.
It's interesting. I've noticed too, if you said, does your company have an official, let's say, official initiative, an official strategy, I think the responses would be higher in percentage than if you said, is there actually anything of substance happening underneath that strategy, underneath that official position? So I think there's a lot of cases where there's a little more lip service maybe than actual activity.
Yeah, I wrote a little piece recently about preparing your workforce for AI with a guy at MIT who has a learning-oriented center there, and we were really sort of faulting HR organizations for not moving faster in this direction, preparing their workforce to understand, how AI or analytics works and how to make better decisions on the basis of it and what to trust and not to trust and so on. I think very few of them have stepped up to the plate in that regard.
It's a, when you mention that education and so forth, it brings me to, where you and I probably spent our most time together over the years has been through the International Institute for Analytics, which you co-founded. What led you to co-found IIA back, I guess, now a decade ago almost exactly, maybe even a little longer?
Well, I'd always found it to be very productive intellectually, I guess, to get a bunch of companies together who were interested in the same topic and to share ideas. And, my selfish interest is I can listen to them and learn from their experiences and write about it. So that was really primarily what appealed to me. I think in retrospect, IIA has really focused more on the assessment piece, which I think is quite good for companies, maybe a little less on the sort of identifying great new approaches to organizing or whatever, some of that too, certainly. But I didn't really realize at the time that assessment would end up being as big a piece of that business model as it has turned out to be.
You talked about companies and HR maybe not doing a good job of preparing the workforce for what's coming. Obviously, now that I'm at a university environment, I know universities are similarly struggling everywhere with how do the universities prepare the students for the work world while simultaneously the companies that they join are struggling with how to prepare those new employees for the future within that company. So what kind of change have you seen in curriculums in recent years? And then what advice might you have for students who are thinking of getting into analytics, maybe not as a professional data science in all cases, but in an analytically focused role in a company? What do you think some of the advice you'd give them today would be?
Well, there's, I think, good news and bad news. The good news, the great news really, is that there are a ton of analytics specialty programs, particularly, I think, master's programs. So I think 3 years ago, I did some work with the AACSB, the organization that accredits business schools around the world. And even then, there were 200 programs in analytics or data science or whatever in business schools alone. And then you also have now, you have a lot more in business schools. You have a lot in engineering schools and computer science departments and so on. So these programs have really exploded. I think the bad news around that, if there is any, is that we don't really have a good categorization of what it means to work in analytics. What are the different skills that you need to be prepared for? We call people data scientists. Some of them are more data oriented. Some of them are more analytics oriented. Some of them are more AI oriented. Some of them are really, great translators between business and these more technical areas like analytics and AI. So I think we need a categorization that students could use to say, well, if I go to this program, I'll learn this, and if I go to this program, I'll learn that, so they can make intelligent decisions about it. I think it's very hard for them right now.
One thing I'd be interested you I ironically, in all the times we've ever been together face to face, I don't believe it's ever been in my hometown or your hometown because both of us had roles where we were effectively, traveling around different places for whether it was public or private events. Obviously, as COVID
I
hit,
did run
someone like
into
yourself.
I did run into you in the Boston airport once, which was my
Oh, we
hometown.
did. And you know what's funny? That was random too. You didn't know I was there and you were
No, I had
leaving and
no
we both
idea.
got delayed together. And I think we had dinner on the spur of the moment. So I guess it counts as meeting in the hometown, but it wasn't intentional. So maybe that was a cheat.
I'm sorry
Yeah,
to
how did
interrupt
that?
you.
No, I was saying, I mean, your personal business model was effectively traveling to companies to talk to them? And obviously, you were impacted in COVID from not being able to do that. How have you seen things loosening up, and what are you seeing as the move forward model? Do you think you'll be back to traveling quite a bit if you'd like to be here in another quarter or two, or do you think a lot of companies are going to continue to want to just have you join remotely and have a conversation?
Well, I'm still doing a fair amount of working with companies for events and so on, but I don't have a single physical, you know, face-to-face appearance scheduled yet. So I'm sure it will happen again at some point. And, you know, I'm fully vaccinated. I do meet with people on a one-on-one basis occasionally, but it's going to take a while, I think, for these big events to start happening again. And I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I like getting out and meeting people face to face, and I like the excitement of being on a big stage and so on. But it's awfully convenient to sit in your office and beam around the world. And I don't know, I do a lot more guest appearances in universities now because, you know, somebody was asking me yesterday from the University of Washington, kind of a hassle to fly all the way out to Seattle, but not that much of a hassle at all to hop on Zoom or something. So it's really opened up, I think, idea sharing just because the cost of it is so much less, but kind of boring after a while. So I'd like a little bit more travel. I wrote a little piece about this with Tom Redman. I don't know if you know him. He's kind of a data quality guy. He calls himself the data doctor. About this is a great opportunity to really learn from what's, you know, the data that we have about how people are performing and how happy they or unhappy they are about it and so on. Some companies, a lot of these companies who have big people analytics groups are doing that and really being quite rigorous about their decision making about post-COVID. A lot of them are just saying, we need to get back to the way we were before and let's get everybody back in the office come hell or high water, which I think is probably a bad idea.
Well, I'll tell you, before we go, one thing you've always been good at is spotting the trends before they happen. So if you look at the landscape as it exists today and you think out maybe 3 years, 5 years from now, what are a couple of the trends that are just starting to bubble up that you think are going to go big for us?
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this some. I think we're still in the relatively early stages of what I call the post-algorithmic era, in that there's so much automation available now in how we do analytics, machine learning, data science, that it's empowering a lot of people to participate in that who could never do it before, have some quantitative skills, but, you know, wouldn't know their way around an XGBoost model. And also, I think it's increasing the productivity of professional data scientists. That's getting combined with this whole MLOps movement to kind of manage machine learning models as if they were a real business asset. So I think we're going to see a lot of changes from that set of capabilities that we haven't really fully understood yet. And so that, I think, is definitely one big thing that's going on. You know, sometimes we come back to the past, and I'm seeing more and more companies saying, well, there's still a place for rule engines, particularly combined with machine learning. And I'm excited about that because, you know, we can actually understand what rules mean and interpret them, which we often can't for these really complex deep learning models and so on. So those are just a couple of things.
You know, I'll comment both of those. So it's interesting. One of the things I've been writing and doing some conference talks on lately has been the rise of these new roles within data science. And you hit on a couple of them, like the ML ops. And what struck me and what I've been mentioning is, you know, people talked about a data or analytics translator who translates between business and data science. A lot of these other roles are similar translation roles, right? Like ML ops is really a translator between operational systems management for large scale processing and the use of those capabilities in a data science context, as an example, or people that are now, a hybrid of a software person with a data scientist who are helping to put on the interfaces. So I think the discipline, as it actually starts to have bleed into other areas and have other areas bleed into it's enabling us to have bigger impact. And hopefully that
Yeah, and I
trend
know we
continues.
find these gaps that aren't really covered by existing roles, and somebody says, well, we need a translator role, or well, we need a product manager role to make sure these things get into deployment. And I think it's great. It'd be better if we thought about that from the beginning, I suppose, but we're not quite smart enough as humans to do that yet. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. As always, your insights are terrific, and I always enjoy talking to you. And I guess we'll see how our recovery goes, and hopefully we will see each other back out on the road again here sometime in the coming months, Tom.
Accidentally or on purpose, right?
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.